So first, thank y'all for having me. I hope I don't disappoint. I'm not the most experienced speaker, but I love God's Word and I love to share it with others. And so we're going to dig in here in just a second, but I want to talk real quick about what we're living in. This has been a year, right? And we're still trudging along. And when I think about some of the experiences that we as God's people have been dealing with, you know, we kind of struggle at what to do, what not to do. There's a lot of inconsistencies. I don't like change. I mean, raise your hand if you don't like change. Most of us. And so 2020 is not my ideal kind of year. Like, this is not something I thrive in. I'm not good with it. I'll just admit that. And but, you know, I've seen over, you know, the last, what, 7, 8 months, God's people, we're just still trudging along, you know. And when I look at a group of people in my workplace, maybe, who they seem like they're having a really hard time, I worry for them. And I'm wondering, you know, why are they struggling so bad? And then I'm very blessed because in the county that we live in, we have a lot of people who are members of the church. And that's a rarity in this day and age. But we're so blessed. And I'll talk to another coworker and they'll be doing okay. You know, maybe things are not great, you know, but they have been willing to adapt and they have found strength and they keep on keeping on. And I just want to encourage you all to keep doing that because we're God's people and the world sees us, you know, and maybe we don't think they see us, but we still send a card in the mail to somebody, or we still provide a meal for someone, or we reach out when we know each other are struggling in the church and outside the church. And I just want to encourage us all to just keep on keeping on because the world is looking at us. They really are. And when tragedy happens, you know, they're the people who run towards the danger and the fire and all that. That's us. That's what our people do. We just dig in and we get to work. And so I just want to encourage you all to keep doing that. Like Celine said, you know what? We have missed out on some serious stuff this year. I mean, I have been a little sad. And one thing that I've learned this year is fellowship cannot be replaced. And this is so awesome just to be like, there are people here. And I get excited about that because, like, you don't get to see, but outside of school, I see very few faces in a day. And so that fellowship cannot be replaced. And I think back to March and how tough that was. And our church, we don't have a lot of young people, but we have a lot of amazing young people. And one of their moms, my sister, she said, you know, all these older people, they haven't even been out of their house in like 2 weeks. Like they hadn't seen anybody. And she was like, we're going to do a car parade. So we all go up to the church. Like we won't even get out of our cars to even look at each other. We're like, we're going to put our posters on. So we decorate the cars with posters. Someone's got balloons. And it was just to encourage them. And I probably cried through half of the parade. It took 3 hours. And just to drive through Marshall County, 3 hours to get by, to go by everybody's house. And there were, I don't know, 12 cars or something like that, maybe 13. And we're driving at like 3 miles an hour, waiting for them to come out of their door, you know. And then we're all, woo, and all this stuff. And their faces just lit up. And it was so refreshing to see them just happy, just to see another person, you know. Like, and so people have been creative this year, I think. You know, when you're sitting at home, what, you know, you get on Pinterest, you find a cool idea, you make it happen. But people have come together as families. And I've seen people post, like they've had like a themed meal night, or they have a special Bible study with their kids and they go the extra mile, you know. And that's refreshing to see. And I hope, if nothing more comes out of a time like this, I hope the family unit is stronger. I hope that as God's church, we are more unified and we see those things that out in the world may look like, you know, a disaster, but I hope we can find the good and we can make people look at us and know that we're different. So also, I've seen some pretty cool campouts, and I'm just going to tell you, I'm a glamping kind of gal. I'm not a big camper. I have been several times. I do love that, but I'm more, you know, I like a flushing toilet. I like a bed that is comfortable and has a mattress on it. I don't mind a tent so bad as long as it doesn't leak. But I do love those times when we get together, especially in the summer. We'll have like a family camp and we'll all go to the cabins. And we've got a fellow camper here that a couple of our churches would get together and we would camp together. And that fellowship is so important. When we don't have that, we just miss it. But I love in a camp being with my people and my tribe. And you all know what that feels like, because we all have people around us who are our encouragers. They're the people who lift us up. They're people who do good, encouraging, solid things in this world. And when we're having a tough time, they just lift us up and carry us on. These are your people. And they may be your church friends and your family. But your church family, they are your tribe. They are your people. And they hold you accountable, and you hold them accountable. And they love you big, and you love them right back. And when they cry, you cry. But they bring you joy. And that's so important for them to bring you joy, because you should be bringing them joy right back. But the people of God's family should bring you great joy. And if they don't, you got to get your heart in check. These are the people that you bring into your tent. I think this is the coolest little pup tent. I could probably put that up. You bring people in your tent, and what do? You sit around and talk. You know, that's important. We don't talk a lot anymore. People don't communicate like they used to. It's so important for us to communicate with each other. We're all camping as God's people. We're on a pilgrimage. We're on a journey. We're on a mission. And this is God's camp. Let's turn to Genesis 31. And I'm not going to read the whole chapter, because y'all probably know what happens. But this is where we learn of Jacob preparing to leave Laban, and he's going to move out on his own. And we know there's some serious struggle going on in that household. It's not pretty. And many of us have dealt with leaving the nest. That's not the easiest transition. Hopefully we're leaving on better terms than Jacob was. But we know what it's like to separate from what you've known and where you've been and what you're comfortable with. That's a hard transition. And Jacob is making this move now. In Genesis 31, verse 13, it says, "I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family or your kindred." And so this is God telling Jacob, it's time. It's time for you to move on. And you're not going to stay here with Laban. And you're going to move back towards where your family is from. Now, God had blessed Jacob in the past by being in favor with Laban. But as they grew up, you know, his children were not happy with what they were seeing. They were seeing Jacob prosper, and they were not. And they kind of felt slighted, I guess, you know. That was their inheritance, and he's taken off with it. And so they weren't really happy about that. So on several occasions, Laban had just kind of done Jacob wrong. And we see where God continually took care of him, and the herds would produce exactly what Jacob needed. And so he was blessed. And rather than saying goodbye and letting Laban kiss all the children and the grandchildren, Jacob decided to flee. And so at the end of 31, and we're going to come back to this later, this section a little bit later, but at the end of chapter 31, from our reading, they made a truce. They made an agreement. They decided they were going to get along. And Laban got to kiss his children and his grandchildren, and they parted. And God, in his providential care of us, in chapter 32, he knew what Jacob was getting ready to face. He just got done with one family event. And guess who's waiting in the wings? his past, right? And Esau is out there, and God knows it. And so in chapter 32, what does he do? It says, Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. He knew who the angels were from. He'd seen them before in Genesis 28, and God had just reminded him of that. And he knows that that ladder that he saw in chapter 28 that was full of those angels, these were the angels again coming to him. And in verse 2, we see how he responds to this. And when he saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." That word from the Hebrew is Machanah, and I'm probably not saying that just right, but it means encampment. And so we vision here Jacob with all of his family, and there are lots of them. It's not just a little immediate family over here. First of all, he's got two wives, and he's got all these children and all these herds, so I can't even imagine what it was like to have to pilgrimage with all of this. But let's just imagine them kind of coming together, I'm sure, at the end of a day, and they probably round everybody up and make sure everything's secure. And now there is an army of angels surrounding them in protection. That is God's camp. He is the God of Jacob. He's the God of Isaac. He's the God of Abraham. And he's encircling his people with the protection of angels. And that, to me, is a very beautiful thought. I can't even imagine what that would appear like. But that was his camp. This is God's camp right here today in this place, in this world. And just like he surrounded Jacob on that day that he traveled back towards Canaan, he surrounds us. And when I think about the world, it is a vast place. I've not been to hardly any of the places on this map. but I think about when I come to this congregation or to another congregation, I fit in. I have people. I have a tribe. I don't know you, but I feel like I've known you all my life, like Celine said. I met some awesome people last night at dinner. I'm like, we're sisters. Like, I've known you all my life. If you don't experience that, you just need to go travel somewhere and just go to church somewhere, just so you can feel that. Our tribes are dotted everywhere on this map. There are some great things about Facebook. There are some awful things about Facebook. But I've connected with a lot of people who are God's people there. And it's so encouraging to me to be able to see what they're doing, hear what they're doing, and they're in a whole other country. They're in the whole other side of this world. And I can pray for them. I can learn about their family. There's great ways to connect. And it makes us all, it brings the world to a smaller perspective. So I've got some missionary friends that we talk to and we keep up with in India and South Africa and Indonesia. And I couldn't even tell you, I mean, I know where Indonesia generally is over there, but like, I will probably never see it in my lifetime, and that's okay. But when we gather as his people, just like when we go to PTP, if you haven't been, you should just go, because it's like a little bit of heaven right here. When you see all of those people, there's usually like maybe 3,000 to 5,000, I don't even know. But when you see all of these people who are striving to go to heaven together, it's just humbling just to be in the presence of other Christians. And it's an awesome camp. It's an awesome week. But how amazing is that thought for God to surround us? There's a song that's called Surround Us, Lord, and I don't know if y'all know that one, but it's taken right from Psalms 125, verse 2, and it says, "As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore." And I just love that visual picture I get in my mind of God just surrounding us. So today we're going to talk about how God surrounds our camp. He surrounds his church and his people, and he gives his camp, and he gives us so much. But we're going to talk today about the protection that he gives us. He also gives us great provisions. And he also gives us purpose. So we're going to start with protection. And when I think of protection, I think of my kids. And anyone who's been a parent or an aunt or a grandmother or whatever, you think about when they're little and you're rocking them and you swaddle them up really super tight and keep them warm and sing to them. And then as soon as their little feet can hit the floor, you're like running around trying to grab everything out of the way. You steer. I felt like I did this all the time. You would just steer them wherever they're supposed to go and try to keep them from tripping. We put all the little electrical outlet things in so they don't touch anything to hurt themselves. We're protecting them. That's what we do. When they get a little bit older and they go to school, you know, teasing will happen, and we have to shield them from the people who are being negative or bullies, and they get sick, and we, you know, immediately we're put a cough drop in their mouth and take their temperature and, you know, do all the things to protect them. Take them to the doctor. When they get in the car and they're going to drive, I'm going to just be honest, I prayed in the car with them from point A to point B, and when they were on their own, I prayed for them from point A to point B, because what? We want to protect our kids. And so we all want to do that. We want to protect them from harm, from illness, from strife and struggle. But the truth is, it doesn't matter how hard you try. They're going to all endure all of those things in this life. They're just going to. That's what life is. The only true protection that we as parents can give them is to make sure they learn about the one who can protect them into eternity, and that's our God. And we need to make sure they are in his camp. God protected Jacob, and we see all the struggles that he had and his family and his in-laws. And we talked about, you know, that travel that they probably did. I'm sure those children were not always cooperative. I'm sure they whined. I'm sure somebody was having a problem. But God was there surrounding them and providing for them. And in Genesis 32, after we read that this is God's camp, Jacob sends out some messengers, and he's aware of what's coming. And they ride out, and there's Esau, and he's got 400 people with him, 400 men. And Jacob's human, so he does what we all do. We worry, and he was distressed. So let's read what he says in Genesis 32, verse 7. And it says, "Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that was with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands." So he's worried. He's taken all his family away from what they've known, what's comfortable, what they've lived in for years. And he's got them out, and they're crossing, and now there's an enemy coming towards them. And at this point, he's done physically what he can do to protect them. And that's a lot of times as parents, that's what as our first reaction. Physically, what can I do to protect them? But then in verse 8, he says, "If Esau comes to the one company and smite it, then the other company which is left shall escape." Now he's facing, I might lose my family. That is not going to be easy for him to digest. He's probably really worried now. And so we read on in verse 9. "And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and of my father Isaac, the Lord which said unto me, Return unto thy country and to thy kindred, and I will deal well with thee. I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and all the truth which thou hast showed unto thy servant. For with thy staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I am become two bands. Deliver me, I pray thee, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. And thou sayest, I will surely do thee good, and make thy seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for the multitude." He prayed. He reached out. And we as parents, as God's camp, there are sometimes things when we can physically protect ourselves from harm. And then there are some things that are beyond our control. And this is where we can learn from Jacob that we need to go to God and we need to pray. And his children are always protected. Maybe not from harm, maybe not from illness, not from strife or struggles. But he protects us in so many ways from the things that are here on this earth that we struggle with. One of those is to protect us from the enemy, just like he did protecting Jacob from Esau. You know, we can read about Christ in Matthew 4 and about the temptation that he endured. And what did he turn to? What sent the devil away? His word. And we can likewise use the word to protect us. In Psalms 119:11, it says, "Thy word I have hidden in my heart that I might not what? Sin against thee." So this word in my heart is going to protect me from sin. There's a lady that we used to worship with, and she said, "You can't sin and pray at the same time." And that's so true. You can't. His word in our heart protects us so much from sin in the world. Philippians 4:7 says, "And the peace of God which passeth all understanding will guard your hearts and minds through Jesus Christ." His protection of peace guards our hearts and our minds. That's comforting to me. Should be comforting to all of us, that he guards your heart and your mind. He is there to rescue us too, and to deliver us from evil. We read 2 Timothy 4:18, and it says, "The Lord will rescue me from every evil deed and bring me safely into his heavenly kingdom." God is there to protect us from evil. Just as he protected the children of Israel, you know, they were intense. They weren't armed with, you know, the latest, greatest, whatever it was back in the day. They just had modest tents and they were traveling across. But when we read of the Israelites, they went up against people who had walled cities and they were victorious. So can you read Philippians 4:13 and say, "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me," if you don't truly believe that? You know, God protected them from people who had fortified walls that were so thick you could drive a chariot across them. And they're in measly little tents. He can do that for us. And we just have to allow him to do that for us. We have to allow him to be our guide. And we have to put his word where we need it. And that's right here in our heart. He protects us also with a way to endure. You know, this journey has bumps in the road. Sometimes the road takes a sharp left, and we didn't see that coming. Don't text and drive. Our path is narrow, and straight is the way, right? And sometimes there's a bump in the road, and we must stay on the narrow path that's laid before us. Sometimes the right path is not the easiest one, and the devil knows that. And he's going to try to tempt us. But God is there with us because he's helping us find a way to right our path and stay on the narrow way. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, God says, "No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind." It's common, guys. We're all going to have temptation. And it continues, "And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will provide a way out so that you can endure it." A lot of people want to say that verse means, well, you're only, you know, God's going to give you something, but he's not going to give you something you can't bear. Well, sometimes we don't think we can bear it, do we? Sometimes it is gut-wrenching, terrible, painful. Sometimes it worries us for days, weeks, months. But the promise there is he gives us a way to endure it. And we can bear it. It's whether we choose to bear it or not. There's the difference. God is faithful, and he will help us endure it. We have to choose to let God help us endure it. We're going to be tempted in this life. That's a fact of the matter. We're going to face trouble. But he's faithful, and we can remain faithful to him. Let's turn to 1 Peter chapter 5. And we're going to start in verse 6. And I'm going to read from the ESV. 1 Peter 5, verse 6. It says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so at the proper time he may exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same kinds of sufferings are being experienced by your brotherhood throughout the world. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. To him be the dominion forever and ever. Amen." We're not alone in the sufferings of this world. Our other brothers and sisters in Christ are going to face them every day with us. You know, some people like to say, well, if you're Christ, you're not going to have all this bad stuff. That is not true. He tells us right here, you're going to, and you're not alone. But we can lean on God because he's going to perfect us and strengthen us and establish us and help us endure. Another way God protects us is by watching over us. I can remember as a child knowing who was watching me at all times, right? You know who that person was that had their eyes on you? Usually it was my mama, and there was four of us siblings, and literally we played outside all day, every day. I was usually most resistant. I would like to stay indoors. But she would usually kick us out and go, y'all go play. Y'all get out of here. You know, she was canning or something. And so we would go outside. Well, in the summertime, usually we were not running the air, and she would have every window in the house open. And we didn't think she could hear all of our business going on over here or who was in a fight, but usually my two younger brothers were at it with each other. And I'll be like, y'all stop. And I would get on to them. Well, I earned the nickname Miss Mother from that, my youngest brother. Every time I would say, like, hey, y'all need to quit that because she's going to hear you. All right, Miss Mother, you know. And so so he still calls me that on occasion. But that was like, I was the oldest. I was kind of in charge, and I didn't think Mama could hear what was going on. And so usually I would get in trouble if I didn't say, hey, the boys are out here, you know, trying to kill each other. And so I would always report back, as I should have, right? And so I earned that that Miss Mother. But we always knew who was watching us. They knew I was watching what they were doing. I was going to go tell. Mama was listening and watching for us. We'd stay at a grandparent's house. I knew who was watching. You know if the granddad's going to let it slide, right? He's like, oh, I didn't see that, you know. Usually the grandmother's like, now we can't be doing that. And they say it in their nice, happy voice. But we know who's watching us. And we've all been there. And as we age, who we're watching kind of changes, doesn't it? You start out watching their every move. You know, you're like all the time. And then as they get older, you kind of go, okay, I'm going to have to step back, even though my children will be like, mm-hmm, she says she steps back, but no, she don't. I try really hard, y'all. But then the shift happens later on in life where we're watching our grandchildren or we're watching our aging parents. And we're still doing those things to try to help them through their life. And we try to protect them, don't we? We make sure that all their medications are laid out in the right order on the right day so that there can be no confusion. Or we roll up the rug so the walker doesn't trip it when it, you know, you go over. And speaking of tripping, I fell over that. But we do those things because why? We want to protect them. We want to make sure they're safe so that at the end of the night when they go to sleep, we can cover them up and go, whew, we made it, right? God does that for us. He gives us each other to watch out for each other. And so let's turn to Psalms 121. And we're going to read 1 through 8. Psalms 121, it says, I lift up my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord who has made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forth forevermore. When I read that, I think of some pictures that I've seen of big encampments, and maybe they have a fortress that they've built with some rugged walls. And there's a watchman, isn't there? There's somebody who stays up all night long, and he's watching out for the camp. That is our God. He's watching out for us. He's there at all times, every moment of every day. And if we just look up, he's there. You know, the people in this world who like to do wrong, they're not really keen on a God who hears all and sees all. And most of them don't want to acknowledge God because they don't want to deal with a guilty conscience, do they? Some fear God because they know he can see all these things. And I think about that little song that we sing with our kids, and I teach nursery class a lot, and I love it. And we sing that song, Be Careful Little Eyes What You See, right? That's a powerful little song right there. Because you're teaching them at like two that God sees what they are seeing. And he sees what they are hearing. And he's watching what they're doing. And the whole premise behind it is not fear. Because what does the end of the verse say? It says, for the Father up above is looking down in love. That's why he's doing it. Not so that you fear God because, oh, he's watching every move I'm making. But because he loves us, he's watching us and he's caring for us. In Matthew chapter 10, let's read verses 27 through 31. Matthew chapter 10. These are the words of the Lord. And in verse 27, he says, what I tell you in the dark and say in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim it on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father, but even the hairs of your head are numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. You know, there are so many awesome things that God has made. I mean, we look at, I'm not a big bird fan, but we look at sparrows and we look at birds. I don't know how they fly. I don't get it. But God made them that way, and that's why they do. Everything is created in such intricate levels. And, you know, you can look at a cell, you know, if you're taking biology, and I'm like, how does that even work? It's God. That's why it works. But even the hairs on our head are numbered. There's not a thing that happens to you in a day that God does not know about. Not one thing. I lose a lot of hair. I guess I'm aging or something. I don't know. And some of them are white. But I lose a lot of hair. That's a lot to keep up with in a day, right? And I don't like finding them on the carpet when you're vacuuming and stuff. That's not cool. I'm like, how much hair is falling out of my head? So if he knows what, how many hairs have fallen in a day, he knows the big stuff and the little stuff, guys. He knows everything that's happening with you. He loves you, and he watches over us because he values us. He is also our shelter and our refuge. You know, when we're camping out, I've been camping before when there was a storm rolling in, and that is not a good time. There's water rolling through the tent, under your cots, under your stuff, and the fire might go out, and then you'll have to pile in the car or the van or the whatever to get to shelter, right? Because who wants to stay out in that? You know, all of us have had some pretty terrible things to happen in our lives. We've had things in our marriage that are difficult, things that we've dealt with, like financial struggles, maybe death of a loved one. And when we think of the things in life that get us down, I know for me, the only thing that carried me through was God and his people, because that's what God's camp does. He protects us like a king protects his people. He's with us in the battle. When things go wrong, when we're sick, he carries us through. I've been at the point of death for a few times in my life. I'm not that old, but I've been there. And I cannot imagine what it's like if you are sick or ill and you don't know God. I cannot imagine. My mama, I have a Addison's disease. My adrenals don't work. And we didn't know that that was the problem. And my mama would come up and sit with me in the hospital, and she was like, every time I walk in here, you get worse. Stop doing that. Because I would be fine, I would be fine, and she'd walk in, something terrible would happen, you know, and here come all the nurses, and they finally figured it out, got me fixed. But there was a couple of times I was like, okay, this is it, guys. Like, I'm checking out. I can feel it. Like, this is done. This body is over it. But I can't imagine having that feeling, thinking, okay, this is it, and not knowing what's next, or not having hope for what's next. When our body leaves this world, the angels of God take us. That is protection. That is love like no other. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, we can read about David, and he had a son who was sick. And while he was sick, he mourned him. And we know that the servants, they were pretty afraid to go tell him that this child had passed, because they didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, he was sad. He was grieving. He was hurting. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 23, we read what David says. He says, "But now he is dead. Why should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me." We are all going home. From the moment you are born on this world, you are going home. And it is your choice on what that home is. And if we serve God, then we know what we get. We get heaven. Through his mercy and his grace, we get heaven. We're just camping here. In that, we have no reason to hope for someone to endure life in misery on this earth. We should just be grateful when they go. Our faith and our resolve, it should be to be with those loved ones again. And that should be a catalyst for our lives to keep serving God. You cannot quit. You must keep keeping on. When I hear people complaining, I don't love that. I try not to. I know I'm guilty of it, just like we all are at times. But when I see people who live in self-pity or complaining, they need to get their heart right with God. Because instead of complaining, we need to be praying. We need to be thinking about what we do need in this life. And we have to look for other people to serve. You know, when the going gets rough and all you have to do is think about your grief or your loss or the struggle that you're going through, you're still God's people. That hasn't quit just because you're suffering. And so the only way I know personally to get away from that is to not focus on me anymore and to start focusing on others. And so you have to look for other people to serve. Like, that's your job. It doesn't quit just because you lose or you've got lost. You have to keep going. You have to read His Word and you have to work for His kingdom. I'm going to read a few verses in Psalms. Psalms 9:9. The Lord will be a refuge for the oppressed, a refuge in times of trouble. Psalms 62:8. Trust in Him at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before Him. God is a refuge for us. What is that pouring out your heart for Him? That's a call to prayer. He's asking you to reach out to Him, to pray to Him. And He hears us because we're His camp, we're His people. Psalms 18:1-3. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer, my God, my strength in whom I will trust, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised. So shall I be saved from my enemies. The Lord God protects His camp. He also provides for our physical needs. Back in Genesis chapter 31, God provided for Jacob when Laban wanted to reduce his herds. And this is the part where we're going to go back to that. So just turn right back to Genesis 31. And God intervenes on Jacob's behalf to Laban in verse 24. And he says, "But God came to Laban, the Syrian, in a dream by night, and said to him, 'Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad.'" And then skip on down to verse 42. And this is what Jacob tells Laban. "Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." Jacob was God's camp, and He was going to take care of him. He told Laban, don't speak to him evil. Don't speak to him good or bad. And Jacob knew that God was taking care of him. He provides for his people, and he ensured that Laban was not going to press for the wealth that Jacob just took off into the night with. And he warns him to speak carefully. And he had provided Jacob with everything that he had need of. And doesn't God do that for us? I know He takes care of my physical needs. My husband and I have been married for a little over 24 years. And he's been through 14 employers, I think, was my last count. We said he was going to shut down every plant because every time he would go to work somewhere, they would close. And we were like, what? And so everybody would be like, oh, where's he going next? Because we don't want to work there. Like, it was like he's jinxing it or something. He closed down a lot of plants, y'all. But he's worked multiple jobs to make ends meet because that's what we needed. And I look back and in times where my son was very ill, we had a Suburban. And he decided that he loved to ride in the car. Well, guys, gas was $4.54 a gallon. And my sister was the chauffeur, and I was sitting in the back with him and keep him happy and count seizures and just try to deal. And I would call my husband, I'm like, you're going to have to work some overtime. We've already been through every subdivision in all of Paducah, and we're making another round. And he'd be like, I got you, you know. And God provided that at that time because we needed it. Like, we weren't going to survive. We made a million trips to Vanderbilt. You know, we lived literally at the drop of a hat. We'd have to pick it all up and just go. And we didn't have time to worry about money or where it was coming from. It was. And He was blessed with a good job at the time that took care of us. And then He lost it. But that was okay. We didn't have as great a need at the time, and He lost it, and they closed down the whole plant. So God takes care of us. And I think if you live long enough, you can look back over your life and you're like, oh, well, he took care of us there. Or, oh, that was a really tough time. Boy, he knew we needed that. Or we were going to church here and we had a good, strong family and good, strong church family. And then we had to leave. We had to move. But guess what? When we moved, think about all the blessings that came our way. Like these people just wrapped around us. And they supported us and they helped us. Like that happens in life. God provides for us. He provides for everything we need. We are so lucky in this country to have the provisions that are made for us. You know, in other countries, and I've not been, I'm not a world traveler, but others that I know have been, and they go to other countries, and the people who have the greatest need are laying at the steps of a church, and they're crippled, and they're begging for money. And guess who's going to take the money that you give them? The thieves. They're going to come and take everything you just gave these people. And there are no public assistance programs, and there are no food stamps, and there are no food banks. These people are just left. And we live in a country where we can take care of each other. And it's our job as the church to look for those opportunities to serve people who don't have. That's our job. And so look for those ways to be a provision in the lives of others, to be how God takes care of us. We should take care of others. I met some people. We went to Utah with my husband one time on a work trip he had, and we were sitting waiting for a train, and there was this little guy, and he was like, where are you from? And I said, Kentucky. And he was like, do you have to have permission? I was like, no. We just got in the car and drove. And he was astounded that we didn't have to have permission to go from one state to another. He just really couldn't wrap his mind around that. And so I talked to him for a while we waited for the train. He was from Germany. And so I can imagine what the regulations probably were for him and his life. But these are things that we take for granted. Now, during COVID, I hear you couldn't get to Florida if you were from certain states. So we had like a temporary pause in that. But God provides us with those freedoms. He gives us a way to provide for ourselves. He tells us to work. We're commanded in 1 Timothy 5:8 to work. And we're to be good stewards of the blessings that he gives us. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 27, we can read about worrying. And I try not to be one, but we all do, don't we? When it comes to physical things in life, sometimes we worry a little bit about things. And I do that a little bit. But it says, which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature? I'm not a very tall person. I'm vertically challenged, I say. But worrying about that is not going to change one thing about how tall I am. Why should we worry about our clothing? He says, you know, consider all the beauty around you, all the flowers, all the lilies. We are taken care of. Our very physical needs are taken care of. And we think about this life and our journey maybe back a generation or two ago, our grandparents could teach us a real good lesson. I'm sure a lot of you sitting out here today could teach us a good lesson about making do with what you have. I always say I can tell if I'm in the home of someone who's lived through the Depression because there is newspapers neatly stacked in a pile in a corner. All the Ziploc bags are reused, washed out, neatly put away, tucked, folded, put in a Tupperware probably. Because my mama is, that's what she does. She saves everything. Why? Because she's had to do without, and she might need that. And she's going to be a good steward of the things that she has, and we should do that too. We should be good stewards of what we're blessed with. And in this life, we are so blessed physically, and God provides that for us. He also provides His Word. And I think I'm going to stop here, and then we're going to come back. So we'll stop at this point. And I'm going to turn over to some excitement for you all.